This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
You gotta see the baby. When are you gonna see the baby?
Family Matters.
Bess, okay. Ahead of the forum, I found out about the forum because we are great fans and friends of Jack Tomlin's. She's been a regular guest. You know, it's through Jack's posts that I found out about the forum that you were doing last year and that I've started seeing your posts and, you know, Facebook stalked you because I'm kind of like, oh my God, what does Bess do? She's amazing. And you put up a post, and I think it was on Facebook, ahead of the forum. So this is the Asia Pacific Rainbow Families Forum. That was, I think, in May of this year. And I'm going to quote this for you, Bess. You said, if you had told my 11 or 20-year-old self that in my 40s I would be hustling company to sponsor a refugee Iranian lesbian mother to be a delegate in Hong Kong for an Asia Pacific Rainbow Families Forum, not sure I would have quite believed it. It blew my mind in so many ways because it was the biggest kind of smack-in-the-face perspective builder. The fact that, one, you can be an Iranian lesbian mother. That's what stuck with me. You know, my kind of very small worldview from what I get here in Australia, I was just like, how can you be that? How it is hard enough to be a rainbow parent here in Melbourne, here in Australia, and we have so much privilege. That to me just felt like, how can one be that and be safe and have their children be safe and have a voice? Please tell me that you were able to get that Iranian mother to the conference.
Yeah, Shadi was rocking. And the Facebook stalking's mutual, by the way. So it's and you guys are fantastic. And so it's just such an honour and a pleasure to have the chance to finally chat to you. Yay. After all the social media stalking I've done of you guys. Yeah, and I think thank you. I'm kind of getting tinked. Did I say that? No. Honestly, I think you mentioned privilege. I mean, I'm a Caucasian. I'm from Adelaide originally, but 14 years in Hong Kong. And I think living in an international city like that, your worldview is a bit more, there's more opportunities to shape it and be disrupted. But also what I've found is there'd been some, full transparency, there'd been a little bit of apathy around the Hong Kong privileged community, not realizing that rainbow families didn't just mean people that were in a financial, socioeconomic position to go through alternative reproduction technology. And so that was kind of my, okay, if we're really serious about being Asia Pacific and we're really going to champion the voices of all of the countries that we could possibly muster, then we need to find the single lesbian refugee Iranian mothers who just happen to live in Frankfurt. And I think the privilege bit here in a place like Hong Kong is once you find the kind of people to listen to those stories and who are in a position of privilege and power, you can find somebody that wants, you know, we're running on a zero budget. Yeah. I don't get any money for this. Like a typical activist, it's a labor of love and a parent. So whenever you're sort of meant to be parenting, you're being activisty and getting that balance wrong, as we all do. Shadi Amin runs Sixrang, the Iranian lesbian and trans network group. Wow. And she released this report last December, and the title is "It's a Great Honor to Violate Homosexual Rights," and it's tracking not obviously her words, but official hate speech against LGBT in Iran, and she's been tracking that for years and years and years. Now, there's no mention of rainbow families in there because it wasn't in her mind to think about that. So we were getting the gift of having her visibility and her story. And just as an example, I mean, there's so many layers to this. She's a lesbian, was in a heterosexual marriage, escaped that marriage, escaped Iran, but had a child. But her own community are chastising her for not being a pure lesbian and having a child.
You know,
like,
God.
So many layers to that, that we need to be allies. But also, it was an incredible, it was cathartic. And I think that's one thing for the activists that don't get the chance to talk about this. But for her, she's now committed to going, you know what? I need to think more about families. I need to think about these situations. And without, you know, just talking about Iran, it's a pretty, you know, it doesn't get much more hardcore than that globally, but especially thinking about women and trans, and there's that conversion for people to be trans is okay in Iran. Because there's like a forced process that you go through. Either you face the death penalty for being a lesbian, or the government give you a free ride to the hospital and you can go through gender transition. You know, like, so it's just
And that's the thing. It's mind-blowing because, you know, some people, if they don't understand the context of where that's come from, this is someone's life or death here in their hands. Exactly. You know, to not know these stories, to not hear the reasons why this stuff is happening, and these people are surviving.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
The more and more I've been following not only your conference pages, but Planet Ally as well, which, you know, you've created as well. Again, there's no budget there. You know, this is all your hard work, Yves. I keep thinking, oh my God, you know, how can I complain about what I'm, you know, coming up against here in Australia? I feel like as a rainbow family, I'm in the lucky country. Like, if there was ever to be a lucky country to be a rainbow family, kind of, I think I've hit the jackpot by where I have just been brought up, by absolute pure chance to have been raised here and to have been, you know, educated here. I feel like I've literally won the jackpot in that space. And I just think, yes, I've been kind of focusing on local issues, but my God, there is such a bigger global conversation. Before we kind of kick into the forum, so what took you to Hong Kong? What was the move from Adelaide to Hong Kong? Tell us, is there a...
Adelaide, I met a girl.
Now, that's if my co-host Beck was here, she'd want to know this love story, Bess. So go for it. We want to know the love story.
Oh, no. Then it becomes a horrendously stereotypical lesbian football story.
No, stereotype for a reason. There's nothing wrong with that.
But actually, so Kirst is a pilot, actually. She's a captain of an airline here. And they fly big planes, but they train them in Adelaide of all places in the world. So I met a girl on a football pitch. there's a longer story, but you know, she knows how oversharing, you know, makes her feel. But no, I'm fangirling constantly about Kirst. She's amazing. But I think also being out here, like as an Australian expat, never envisaged. And in Australia, I was a professional football coach, so this has been a bit of an eclectic ride. But I never would have envisaged being an activist in a country where I'm living that is not my own heritage. And so I, for many years, didn't engage in the community, not in an apathetic way, but just in a it wasn't my space way. So I went off and did. TEDx's and other community stuff. And then I realized two things. I realized that the visibility and the voices, this is going on like eight odd years ago now, wasn't there. There was the fear and stigma was really driving hard. And also, as some accidental activist journey, you know, it's often, if it affects their life, then it becomes something that might be a catalyst and a call to action. So it was the institutionalized homophobia of going through our intended parenting and then when we gave birth, and the amount of anticlimactic moments, which I now call first world gay moments, but and gay problems, because I think I am in this kind of very, you know, humbled position to try to create platforms with other amazing activists and organizations to get these voices heard. And so our own community are not necessarily woke to the issues of rainbow families, and they think that it's just rich people going off to have surrogacy, or you know, and there's so much more to that as well when you think about the journey that people go on for alternative reproduction technology. So it's not to not hold space for that, because that, you know, there's transnational surrogacy, and Paula Gerber talks about that in her TEDx, and Jack's wonderful for doing that, and Felicity, yes, and all the rainbow fams, like Jason, you know, and Adrian, all the kind of usual suspects. That conversation is really important. But I think particularly in the region here and in the Pacific, the stigma and the gender-based violence and all the issues that I face are compounded when someone's a parent. But sometimes families are being formed in a chosen family way, or out of neglect of children that are rainbow community end up picking up the pieces and loving children back to life, quite literally.
Yeah.
We had a Samoan delegate, Tiara, who is just phenomenal.
Is that the doula?
The midwife.
Yeah.
Three babies she has delivered in her lifetime that were left premature and literally left to die. And she nursed them back with love and care, and her family knew that she wanted to be a mum. And she's the youngest Samoan to adopt, and she has to adopt as a man on the certificate. She has, I've seen it, but one way of describing her on the adoption paper, it talks about her being a father. Her children have never, ever called her anything but mother.
Yeah.
And she says the kind of mic drop soundbite, you don't need a vagina to be a mother.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, wow.
Yeah.
That's just phenomenal. And then if you look about other fantastic Melbourne folks, you've got Lana Wolf, and you've got Em, with all the work they've done with Down by the River and the Fiji reports and all of the humanitarian responses. Rainbow families are not being thought of in this. When Tonga went through, you know, the Tonga Ladies Association lost their safe space, you know, because of the cyclones that happened, if we're talking about regional issues, that affects families. You know, when Chechnya cracked down and men are being rounded up 100 in the concentration camp, these issues are happening everywhere around the world, but I don't think in the context of family and in terms of gay babies and intended parents and all of those stories. So I think what we were trying to do this year is really blow the lid off that perception of what it is to be a rainbow family and highlight those issues around, you know, sexual minorities requiring and seeking report, you know, that kind of support.
Well, we had a gorgeous opportunity to speak with Tristan Rees, who is a trans man who was unfortunately well known in the media for being the pregnant trans man. So we spoke to Tristan when he was 7 months pregnant, and we also spoke to Tristan after he gave birth to the gorgeous baby Leo. And it was fascinating to kind of track that through. But what people fail to realise is Tristan and his partner had already been raising two other children. So they were already a rainbow family before Tristan gave birth to Leo. And it's like they've been a family for a very long time. But, you know, everyone just wants to talk about Tristan being pregnant, you know. And it's like they're still a rainbow family, and they're just expanding their family and using the tools that they've got to expand that family. But they've been doing it for a decade. You know, people will kind of question you, you know, are you a right to be a parent? It's like, we're already raising two other kids. You know, this is us growing our family in a great way. You know, I love that Tristan would say we've hacked the system, which is, I loved, you know, how Tristan kind of put their perspective on it. The forum kicked off last year. This year you had, I think there was representatives and delegates from 27 countries coming together. What was the hope, and what were the kind of conversations that were coming out of the forum this year? Was it still just sharing those stories that needed to be heard?
I mean, definitely there's a cathartic element. And I think the reason that we've gained traction, we've gone from 10 countries to nearly 30 in the space of a year, is because there hasn't been a space for this dialogue. And I think also we have so many badass activists that just happen to be parents.
Yeah.
And so there are literally, you know, libraries worth of experience and activism and tools and opportunities and sharing and connections. And so it really was just wind them up and watch them go. but you know, some of the highlights and the like incredible, it's like using your privilege for good. We were trying to make sure that we had Asian and Pacific representation on every single panel, and we managed to achieve that. We tried to make sure we had trans or third gender. We didn't have any gender non-binary. So shout out to our non-binary families. Mm-hmm. Let us know, because we want to champion you. And we didn't have families of, you know, able-bodied. And then that's another one that I think it's Jack that's become her and her partner
Jackie
in Australia.
Jackie Jax Brown, yeah.
Yeah. So we did have a chat at Better Together. I kind of went, I'm coming back for you. But what we did manage to do is we had an all-trans parent panel. Wonderful. From Tonga, from Samoa, from Malaysia, with Brenda Alegre, who is an amazing trans advocate and one of the ILGA trans secretariat. And so that was incredible. And Mitch is a Malaysian trans father, been a father for 20 years, you know. And the same sort of thing of that idea of parents becoming parents because society's neglected these kids and, yeah. and the love and the nurture. So it's always constantly dispelling this idea that we're not fit to raise families, you know, or to raise kids.
When too late, we've been doing
new,
it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But what was a really fantastic thing was we partnered with the Global Interfaith Network, mm-hmm. and they are doing this reclaiming families. They're basically at the highest levels of the UN trying to, they've got they've picked a big battle, thank goodness, but yeah. they're an affirming global group of ministers, of ally organizations, of affirming organizations literally around the world. And so when you get those conversations around the Christian right or some of the faith groups that are not supportive, this is the most incredible counter to that. And so we had parents of faith, an entire panel of parents of faith talking about where that happens. And Jason Masters is another Aussie, trying to also pull out the Aussies, who is a dad that came out very late in life, based in Sydney, incredible, beautiful man, and now part of our community. And he had never felt, until he came all the way to Hong Kong, the connection to Rainbow Families, because he came out late in life. Mm. And so he already was a dad. And so I think that was also, there's another space that we need to be thinking about in terms of our advocacy.
Family Matters is brought to you today by the letters LGBTIQA and the number 1.
Going back to that idea of just bringing people together, it's, I don't think that until this year, because we had a larger contingent of Pacific Islands, we had a larger contingent of experienced activists that are globally respected activists, that they realised that Rainbow Families was a battleground. I mean, we see that in pockets around the world. And the Australian Rainbow Families are the most, like, I just fangirl them constantly, you know, what's going on, particularly in Sydney and Victoria, you know, watching the postal survey from here and seeing the videos being produced. I mean, unfortunately, Rainbow Families, like the transgender, you know, diverse communities, are low-hanging fruit.
We're the first to be thrown under the bus. Absolutely. Exactly. We saw it in the marriage equality campaign. Trans and gender-diverse youth and rainbow families, we are the thing to fear. That was the message being sold out to the No campaign. It's the thing. Then I think of this global message and I'm like, oh, but still, you know, comparing, you know, it's like, oh, can I complain? Yes, of course I've got to complain. I've got to, you know, fight to make sure we still get spaces here. But it's also that global conversation, which for me, it's like, it is, okay, yes, I keep saying we are a bloody lucky country here. And yet we're still facing these things. And it's about using, you know, I hate to use the word privilege, but shit, I've got privilege. You know, I am a cisgendered, you know, Caucasian female who is educated. How do we get that out there to support our brothers and sisters and families globally? But also, we don't want to be taken away from their voices. Is that the kind of, it's just that.
And yeah, exactly. And I think it can be harmful to do that comparative suffering stuff. I think it's definitely important to acknowledge where everybody is at uniquely within their journey. And also, when we talk about rainbow families, we very much talk about the intended parents that, like me, with Kirsten and I here, we've got Flinny, who's 6, and Jude, who's 4. We know how lucky we are to have gone through what we call international baby making. You know, we found a donor in San Francisco who's a willing to be known. So we've not, it's kind of the kids are all right version, but we don't plan to shag him. And then we did fertility treatment in Thailand, because in a lot of countries, particularly in Asia, you can't even be a heterosexual married couple and go through fertility treatment unless you're married.
Wow.
And so there's also an opportunity for allyship there. And you do find that, which is kind of nice in a, hey, this sucks, we're all being treated poorly together.
Yeah.
And then we both gave birth, not at the same time, it was 2 years apart, in a hotel. Both gave birth in a Hong Kong public hospital. So kind of international baby making 101. And there's a lot around that. There's a lot around, hey, welcome your new baby to the world, but your wife of 12 years is not on the birth certificate. You know, hey, when I travel with my non-biological son every 6 weeks back to Australia because he's deaf blind and I can't quite access, we need a little bit more, you know, support. Medical, in Australia. Yeah. We don't speak Chinese, but we need a little bit more support. So we come back and forth. Every time I travel, I have to carry a letter with my wife's permission to travel with my non-biological son, you know. And again, I say they're first world gay problems, but it doesn't mean that they don't hurt.
Exactly.
And so I think it is important to own your story and what you need, but also expanding that compassion to others and that resilience. But a lot of what Australia has been able to do, and from challenging legislation to putting policies in place to literally having the Gaby Baby documentary and having the Gaby Babies of, you know, Jack and Felicity and all the kids that are coming out in force now speaking with their own voice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's profound.
That's
and
huge.
That has impact, and that is really inspirational. And you'll find that our Asian, particularly our Asian activists, never tire of hearing these stories because even, you know, Jack was on a panel that I moderated with Taiwan and Japan, and the gay dad from Taiwan, Jay Lin, who's amazing, was talking about, this is where I want to see my twin boys in so many years' time. So there is that acknowledgement of privilege, but there's also acknowledging of the pioneering that's been done. You know, we also had Russia and Pakistan represented, and they're having to live in secret and teach their kids to lie about who their parents are. But we're also seeing that in Japan, not from a violent, protective way, but from a stigma. So our Japanese rainbow families are literally trying to encourage fellow Japanese families to be okay about saying to their children, you don't have to lie about who I am. It's heartbreaking, but all of these stories are really important. We had support from Amnesty International as well, and so, you know, that was phenomenal. We had Sparking Change with Lana also partner with us. So we did a really amazing capacity building workshop, and she's really helping activists know their stories, but to have a little bit more support around how to strategically use that in advocacy. Because
absolutely.
The minute someone starts talking about their kids or their intended parent journey, there's a kinship with a larger demographic.
Yeah.
So I think the opportunity, unfortunately, the reality is rainbow families are a battleground, but what we have to do is equip our families and the advocates that are speaking out from that perspective and really support them. And just to say as well, earlier in May with International Family Equality Day.
That's new too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Maria is, she and I kind of weirdly co-founded the Rainbow Families Forum just because we were in a position to be able to just kind of make it happen. But we're trying to very much, the other activist, Marty Forth, who runs the Rainbow Families Group, he's an expat as well. So we're trying to make sure that, yes, we're in a position to kind of move and shake a bit, but then we get out the way, just get out the way and let these stories come to fruition. But that IFED launched in Geneva officially, the city of Geneva hosted the launch. And so I was there, and the Russian LGBT network were there, and some of the Russian rainbow families were there, advocates, and they couldn't be on social media and they couldn't share their faces. But there are massive gatherings going on in Russia of rainbow family communities. They're holding a conference that I've been invited to later in the year, you know, like in St. Petersburg. Like, this is the point as well, is it's happening no matter what. So if the Christian right want to remove books from libraries and lobby and petition, they can try to erase that, but it's not going away. It's only emerging. And IFED had 40 countries this year celebrating, you know, the Idaho equivalent of the Diverse Family Day. And the launch now means that cities around the world, hopefully Melbourne and Sydney and good old Adelaide for me and the rest of Australia, will be able to have these international days and be part of that community as well. And I think just that solidarity. And the other thing was, no matter whether you're a lesbian mother hiding in Pakistan or you're Jack, you know, living in Melbourne, there are still ways to share about your kids, you know, and ways to see if we can connect those kids and kind of be a pen pal for each other. So there's so much potential for the kids to drive this. And that's what we're trying to have more Gaby Baby kind of panels in the future where the kids are driving the conversation. And this year we had a Filipino lesbian film director, Char Roque, and her daughter, Kelsey. And Char has done a documentary as an ode to her daughter, but it's actually premised around being outed by her former partner. Oh, wow. And he outed to the daughter. And then Max in Fiji, same thing happened to him. His ex-wife outed and said it in a pretty graphic way. So said to their 8-year-old son, "Daddy likes to ...
Yeah.
But the resilience of these families, the speaking truth to power, you know, all of this that comes because you're forced into these moments also means that your families, there's almost like a, I don't want to say like a gay vantage as some people talk about, but there are other layers that make rainbow families really special. I mean, just last night I had to try to explain to Flinny why I couldn't put him to bed because I needed to talk to, I was on the phone to CNN about what's going on at the moment. And I had to say, I don't know if you guys know the book Happy Town. It's a beautiful story about a mayor who doesn't want anybody to paint the town colourful. And and there's a little character that is planting this wonderful plant that sprouts colour, and the mayor wants to, you know, shut that down and imprisons Chutney, the monkey. Anyway, I'm able to explain to Flinny that the bad mayor doesn't want to paint the town colour.
Yeah.
In colour. And, you know, but I need to work out as well, and our rainbow families talk about this, is how are we going to equip our kids in how to talk about this? And I think that's what Australia has done so brilliantly. So going back to that, you know, it's really important that Australia are part of this conversation because there's so much learning and so much capacity building and mentoring and
sharing.
And sharing. So that's just a quick snapshot.
So, but we're going to talk about you touched on it a moment ago, the book banning in Singapore. We're going to touch on that in a sec. But what's come out of the conference? Is there any actions you want to see? Is there any sort of stuff, or is it still just that sort of sharing and educating people in that space? What are we hoping for next year? How can people support the conference as well?
Thank you so much. Put a call to action. So shortly after the conference happened, we had the International Day, or Global Day for Parents. And so we actually put out a statement on that day, which was around the calls to action that we wanted to see. And it was it was kind of a historic moment for us to put out there the kind of list of issues that may be neglected. So June the 1st, we put the statement together, and it was a really, really important moment to take the stories, to take the, you know, the cathartism, to take the mobilizing and actually go, right, this is what we need to do. So this forum has turned into a network, and the Asia Pacific Rainbow Families Network will be releasing a statement very soon about the book bans going on in Hong Kong, but also just the global perspective of that and the regional impact of that. We a statement lined up with the Sustainable Development Goals for 2030. We really are trying to educate our own global community, but also call on governments, UN bodies, you know, public and private institutions, civil society, and you know, community and individual leaders globally to proactively help in legislative frameworks. In the problem, particularly in these countries that don't have legislative protections, is the families are removing kids. So if a woman is in a seemingly heterosexual marriage, but she might be bisexual, the families find out, so the marriage ends. This is kind of like a bit of a case study, particularly we're hearing this in Thailand as an awful model of discrimination. The families remove the child and the mother doesn't see them. Oh. You know, and so these things are happening. So legislation is really important, but it's also about as I said at the top, we're talking about Iran. You know, we're talking about Samoa. We're talking about Tonga. We're talking about Fiji. We're talking about Pakistan. We're talking about Malaysia. We're talking about Russia. This is not Indonesia. These are not your typical, when you think of rainbow families, we almost have a marketing issue globally that it's thought of in terms of just alternative reproduction technology. So it's not to take away from that, because that, you know, I couldn't have been a parent without that, right? Yeah. And likewise, you know, with so many and you guys. That is really important. But it's really, really getting people to that understanding that this is about child protection at its most basic level of mental health, of, you know, education, childcare services, training and support, you know, for the service professionals and, you know, again, in the humanitarian spaces, how are we dealing with kids in refugee spaces?
Yes.
And so going forward, it's picking up even more of the cracks in the system. But I think what's come out of this is this phenomenal group of activists that have come together, are literally a family now. And we've got this WhatsApp group that, you know, goes off 24/7 depending on where folks are in the region. And Maria is in Switzerland with IFED. And so, you know, and sometimes people are in Geneva making submissions. And so there's all these like pockets of where everybody is. Yamanya, who is based in Australia, but is all around the world with, you know, different submissions as part of ILGA. So I think now what we've done is we've brought it together. But what you'll see is this network being a voice, this network making statements and creating that
wonderful
pathway for advocacy.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
It sometimes feels so big. It just feels so far away and so big, and you do feel a bit helpless. People can get active. People can help. How can they start to help and get connected to find out more?
Yeah, well, thank you. At the moment, the network kind of just exists under Planet Ally, but it will form its own. It'll morph into something the more resources that we have. You know, the kind of money that we're trying to raise is just to bring people together. And sometimes you would underestimate raising money for a flight. I'll give you a classic example and something that was remiss of me not to mention. As we have shrinking spaces around the world, particularly the impact of the US being so anti-LGBTI in its government administration right now, you would not believe the impact that that's now having in the region, taking the legs out of so many organizations. Like, that aid funding has been there. We now need to get smart as a movement, as the populist movements around the world gain more traction and alternate right end up with more funding. What we have to do is find other spaces for raising money. And we actually had a school, West Island School, an international school in Hong Kong, that created something called Ally Week. And the kids had this entire week devoted to training each other, peer-led studies, and trying to change the language. The bullying wasn't the issue, particularly in the school. It was the casual, passive, phobic language that was being used. But they very humbly chose the Rainbow Families Forum as their opportunity to raise money.
Wow.
They raised 17,000 Hong Kong dollars. That's three flights from the Pacific. And we were able to use that money with the kids to bring the activists together. But it was such a richer story than that. A lot of the drivers of this Ally Week were openly trans teenagers, and a Chinese trans teenager who had been supported in the school, openly lesbian and bisexual students. And so we had
goosebumps. This is just gorgeous.
We had a moment at the forum where, curating this, we put it together to go, you know what? These kids don't just, you know, write us a check. We take them on this journey. They're part of this now. And they don't realize that their visibility and their actions are going to be inspiring for the activists. And the activists are so humble and can't believe that the kids would do this. So we actually gave them a spot to talk about what they'd done. And they had this amazing video. They chalked the school with rainbow. But this is happening in Hong Kong. This is not an Asia kind of case study. This is not something you see every day. And these kids have blown the lid off what you can do as an active ally in a position of privilege. But we gave them an opportunity to share. And at the end of it, there wasn't a dry eye in the ballroom at Eaton Hotel. Shout out to them. We had a standing ovation for these kids, and it was just profound. And it was kind of that reciprocal profound moment. Like, you couldn't write the script. The activists were going, oh my God, these 15, 16, 17-year-old kids did this for us. We are here together because of that. We are having these dialogues because you helped bring us together. And so sometimes I think when there's fundraising and you have to kind of say, oh, it's for flights and accommodation, they don't realize that the power of bringing people together to have a week of 27 countries interacting with each other, that is life-changing.
Yeah.
And it ripples out into other aspects of activism, because Rainbow Families are not given a platform because there are so many other issues that take space within the LGBTIQ plus advocacy spaces. We are actually not going to hold our forum next year. The Asia Pacific Rainbow Families Forum is going going to work hard behind the scenes. But in 2020, we've made the decision that we're taking everybody to Tonga. We're holding it in July, and it's going to coincide with the Miss Galaxy pageant, which is part of the Tongan Ladies Association, amazing community that you're now seeing in the film that was released in Melbourne, as you've seen, The Ladies in Waiting. We are taking every single country, and we're hoping to build on the 27 to Tonga to create more Pacific Island solidarity, and nice. Also to, you know, as we talk about climate change and other intersectional issues, we want to be there. In July will mean it will also be a possibility to have a lot of families there in the school holidays.
In the last 24 hours, something happened where one of our favourite authors, Jessica, and many other authors' stories have been pulled from up to, I think, 70 libraries in Hong Kong. The books, children's books for our children and other children to know our stories, have been pulled off shelves.
A sneaky little petition.
And they claim to be, we don't have any agenda here except this agenda. Tell us a bit about it, because you're a little bit closer to what we're seeing from the outside in what we're reading.
It's not the first time. There's a bit of a history of this, and there's a more an emergence of this globally as well. But it's Hong Kong's turn. This kicked off in the region a couple of years ago in Singapore, where Singapore had a lobby group petition to remove children's books off the shelves because they were LGBTQ themed. I shall not give visibility to the hate group. Let's just say insert new hate group here.
Yeah, exactly.
And the interesting thing about the hate groups in Hong Kong is they are... insert new name here, quite literally, they pop up as different concern groups. So whether it's the Christian movement, or this time it's the family school movement of concern. And that's not the name.
Creative title. I know, yeah.
But in Hong Kong, the interesting thing is one of our chief haters, if you will, his son actually is one of the public faces of the Occupy movement, Joshua Wong. And Roger Wong is the guy. And so it's a case study of how you use movement building for good and evil. Dad, not so much. Kid, nailing it. But basically, they have been petitioning, we now know, since January. They've been whittling away. I released it now. It's interesting to know why now. We have had a couple of judgments in Hong Kong that have gone against the community. The QT case, which was about a lesbian trying to seek a spousal visa. And initially, the court agreed that there was a discriminative angle, but the appeals process has gone against us. We're also coming up to the end of the year in terms of school. So I'm wondering if they felt perhaps that this was the time to strike, because there have been seemingly the government, not even seemingly, so the government have sided with some of the decisions that are not friendly, and the anti-gay rights group have written an online statement. They've basically pressured what's called the Home Affairs Bureau to suggest that, you know, that it wasn't content that was deemed to be appropriate.
A true story about two penguins. Like, this actually happened.
Poor old Tango.
Tango makes three.
Tango would never have known the trouble. Even David Walliams, the boy in a dress, is about to be turned into a musical with Robbie Williams rocking out. And so they're going to be finding quite a larger base of counters. And that's already what's happening is the ally community, the mums. Oh, my God. There's parent mum groups here are so fired up.
Oh, good.
Also civil libertarians, the literacy groups that create diverse content. You know, freedom of speech, it becomes a number one issue when you try to violate opportunities for speech and content and media. And also, I think, extremely sensitive and triggering when you take on a library. And so, you know, when we think about libraries in our childhood, I mean, for me, it's where I discovered really corny Monty Python, but it's also where I discovered about the world and where kids particularly are questioning LGBTIQI. Questioning you is where they go to seek information. In Hong Kong, they're not going to be covering this at home in a family discussion, right?
And also remembering some countries, kids can't even look this up on the internet. There are restrictions as to what they can see, so they do have to go to their library.
Exactly, exactly. So that is considered a safe space. So when that's violated, that strikes a chord. And our allies who are raising kids, for those that are raising kids and consider themselves active allies, and they can't parent in the way they want to. So then it becomes personal to their family. It becomes a much bigger, broader issue. And so off the back of that, we resurrected the hashtag FreeMyLibrary,
yep,
which is what Singapore were using. And there was also Save Tango. This happened 2 years ago in Hong Kong on a much more quieter level. It wasn't done in such a public way. And so it was only like a blink and you miss moment where we're like, hey, a journalist actually noticed because of what happened in Singapore that these quietly the books were removed. So there wasn't like a public petition, but there was a move that happened. And so that got shut down very quickly. This time, we've got local groups that have formed a united front called United Front for Open Libraries, made up of some of the very high-profile NGO groups, Big Love Alliance, the Pink Dot Movement. So we've had corporate mums reach out going, awesome, right, what do you need from me? Well, and so we found this amazing local artist, Ruby, who goes by...
I've seen the images, yes.
Pluck the Days is her English name. And I just reached out to her, kind of said, look, if we could get some quotes starting from our Asia Pacific Rainbow Families Forum, could we then perhaps, you've never met me before, I'm trying not to scare you with my, oh my God, this is an amazing moment. But she was wonderful. She's an ally that created this story series to share in Cantonese exactly what is going on so that children could understand. And it's a beautiful story that has a PFLAG element of a grandma supporting her grandson who's called queer while he's, you know, he's questioning his sexuality. And so I reached out to Ruby and Ruby gave us permission. So then we had a meme, if you will, was born. And so Gina, I need one from you. I know you guys have been tweeting and I'm super grateful, but I'm going to dig deep and say, and right now that's a call to action.
And what sort of stories do you want?
I'm glad you asked me. So another call to action right now with the Free My Library campaign is send us your little quotes. You can post on Facebook or just use the hashtag Free My Library, just a couple of lines, and we will turn that into a quote and return it back to you on social media, or we'll email it to you. So Joe Hurst, wonderful Joe Hurst that I know you interviewed the other day.
Yes.
With the Gender Fairy,
yes, and a new book called A House for Everyone. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
She gave us a quote just yesterday, which was fantastic. So what we want to do is get as many quotes from literally around the world. The Russian LGBT Network just sent me one. And Jack's done some beautiful sharing of some of the reasons why and talking about the importance of what it meant to her kid. And it's also just thinking about us as we were growing up. Shadi from Iran posted, and she talked about the impact that having books, having access to books would have made. You know, there's a podcaster, Regina Larko, who has Impact Podcast, amazing ally. You know, she talked about no one in the family is the same, and I want my daughters to read about that fact.
Yeah.
I want them to understand that there's really just one thing that matters when it comes to family, that children are being loved. You know, I'm getting goosies just reading that. But
but
Italy has gone through this, and Elton John spoke out about that, you know, a couple of years ago. The US are definitely going through this. Croatia's going through this.
And if people don't think it won't happen here, we just need to see the people that are trying to shut down our safe schools. Like, seriously,
I think
we're not immune.
When haters see a new model,
yes,
and go, oh, here, there's one I hadn't thought of. Thanks very much for that, Singapore.
Copycats, yeah, totally.
Exactly. The copycat hate group is a very big danger. So I think we're very humbled that this has struck a chord, but now we're reaching out to the larger groups that have got, you know, we're small potatoes in the space. we're less than 2 years old. We just got a bit excited and we've been able to partner with some amazing people. But we want this to literally go global for all the right reasons, to give our allies the opportunity, and I say that in terms of our non-LGBTQ allies, but to give all of us the opportunity to express this. And so it is about Hong Kong, but it's a much, much bigger story.
You've been listening to Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.